Keith?
Yep.
Hi, my guest today is Keith Fitzgerald with Investing Daily and also contributor
nope,
to
nope,
Fox.
Nope, 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 nope.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Let me start over again.
Money Morning.
I was right on the tip of my tongue.
Investment Strategy.
Yes, thank you,
Keith. Money Morning.
Yeah, we will erase that. Thank you. My guest today is Keith Fitzgerald, who is a chief investment strategist with Money Morning. Thanks, Keith, for joining me.
My pleasure to be here, Nancy. Thank you for your time.
Oh, you're quite welcome. And I know that you're regularly on Fox also, and I just love listening to you and also reading your columns. And I read with very much interest this morning your latest column, answering some questions from your subscribers and viewers. And your bottom line, from what I could see and what you said, is buy when blood is in the streets, and that, you know, you're a guy after my own heart. So why don't you talk about a little bit about what the market did yesterday and what you think investors should be doing.
Well, I'd be happy to, and thank you for the kind words. We are very fortunate to have a lot of readers around the world. And so with regard to yesterday's action in the market, obviously it was traumatic for a lot of people. They didn't see it was coming. On the other hand, you know, I think it's only natural that it's coming. And so I particularly viewed it with great enthusiasm. And the reason is very simple. Down days like that, while they're viewed as a hazard and sort of an occupational cost of investing, are actually a sign that the market's working the way it should be. It's a sign that risk is being bled out of the system. Things can't go up forever. So, you know, to me, rather than running for the hills and sticking my head between my legs with a sign on my rear end that says kick me when it's over, we went shopping. We went shopping, you know, and we encourage clients around the world to look for things in energy, for technology, for big U.S. nationals, because clearly the dollar is the last most attractive horse in the glue factory, and we want to be a part of that.
Now, I know you also mentioned in your article that you sort of like small regional banks right now. Can you tell me a little bit why that is?
You betcha. Small regional banks are very different from the big banks that are making everybody's life difficult at the moment. They don't play in derivatives. They don't have a lot of capital exposure. They're not trading for their own account. They're doing banking the way it was intended to be. Banking, if you remember, 100 years ago, 150 years ago, was designed to be a boring business. It was designed to fuel local economies. It was designed to provide lending and support for the community. And, you know, these small regional banks are doing very well at that right now. They don't have a lot of overextension. On the other hand, the big banks have got huge problems with capital reserves. They're trading derivatives investments. Customers have become irrelevant to them.
Right.
And to me, that's a significant problem. So I think in the next quarter, maybe two, as there are realignments, as they come into accord with Basel, they have capital reserve adjustments, they have further shenanigans with regard to the Fed and the derivatives markets, that the big banks are going to have problems with their profitability. Regional banks, on the other hand, are just going to tick right along and are very attractive to me.
Right, and that's an area that, of course, I came from banking, so I love the small regional banks. And one of the reasons I've always liked them is because other bigger banks come out and buy them, and you get a nice premium. And while you're waiting on that premium, you get a nice little dividend, too. Do you see any kind of M&A activity in the regional banks coming up?
You know, that's an interesting question. I don't see any signs imminently that's coming. However, the big banks are sitting on trillions of dollars in cash, and when they decide that the cost of capital has gone up and they'd rather grow through acquisition than trading, I think we'll see that. But for now, trading is very seductive, and the allure is simply too high, which is why they're investing their time there.
Yeah, and absolutely. Now, I'd like to change gears. You wrote another article on basically the five key traits to investing success, and I think in the kind of market that we're in now, which definitely has become a lot more volatile than it has in the past 6 months or so, that investors probably need to review some of those keys because many people will be pressing the panic button.
Yeah, you know, and that's I understand that impulse. That's one that is very powerful, especially on days like we saw yesterday where the Fed just sends everything haywire. But really, if you remind yourself why you do this, you know, most investors I know want to build a successful financial future. They want to hold on to the capital. They're more concerned with the return of that capital than the return on that capital. And so that speaks to the need to do a couple things consistently, particularly if you want success. Number one, I think you've got to get out of your comfort zone. A lot of investors invest and they get trapped in methodologies or certain types of stocks. They fall in love with their assets. That is a huge mistake. The most successful investors I've met all over the world, whether it's George Soros or Richard Branson or Jim Rogers or any of half a dozen other names, These guys read voraciously. They're always looking to get outside their comfort zones. They're the ones that have stacks of magazines and books all over their house. The second thing I think investors need to do is they need to understand that persistence is key, particularly in today's markets. They often will take one shot at a transaction. If it doesn't work, something's wrong. You know, never mind the fact that the pros take four or five swings at the same investment before they settle in a position that they like. It's not uncommon to hear them say, you know, I tried to buy XYZ, but I got bounced out, so I bought back in, you know, later, because they're trying to get settled.
Yeah, because they know that that's a good investment. It may just not be that the timing's not exactly right.
Well, and that's the thing, right? That speaks to a healthy skepticism, which is the third trait I identified. You know, you've got to form a hypothesis when you're investing, in my opinion. And if the hypothesis remains intact and you have the expectations, you've simply identified something that the rest of the market doesn't see. So that's not the same thing as making the wrong decision. You need to be just simply skeptical because you need to understand what it is you're getting into and you need to look at it every single day. The other thing I think that's really unique, in particular, Richard Branson of Virgin is an exemplary example of this one. Boy, that's repetitiously redundant, isn't it? Exemplary example.
Sounds good, though.
But they need to make decisions that benefit others. You know, and one of the things that's very surprising about this is that if you make decisions in today's world that are geared towards the benefit of other people, I think the profits will follow. And many times I've seen the most successful investors in the world gather information, make these decisions for the benefit of other people, and they connect the dots later. So that's interesting to me. And then finally, the fifth trait that I identified is you've got to have the freedom to fail. And what I mean by that is that our society lionizes the notion of high-power people climbing the ladder of success and never stumbling. Today, we like to believe that legendary investors are infallible. But if you talk to Warren Buffett, if you talk to Richard Branson, if you talk to George Soros, Jim Rogers, these guys understand that making mistakes are part of the game. George Soros, in particular, says the reason he's successful and he's fabulously wealthy is that he survived because he's capable of recognizing his mistakes. And that's something that individual investors habitually get wrong because they're so focused on being right that profitable is almost an afterthought. I personally, as a professional with 33 years in the market, rather be profitable than right anytime.
Amen to that. And, you know, it's the same principle whether you're investing or whether you're starting a business. And I've heard people like Ross Perot, for example, said he failed so many times before he ever latched on the right idea. But it makes you learn and it makes you more flexible. And I think that's a key also, and I'm sure that you're going to agree with that investors really need to stay flexible. There's no longer really any buy and hold.
No, there really isn't. There's buy and manage now. And, you know, to me, buy and hold has always been a significant problem because it is predicated on the notion of the greater fool theory, that you're going to buy it, that you're going to hold it, and somewhere down the line, some greater fool is going to come along and pay more for what you're selling than you paid to buy it. Now, to me, in today's markets, where the Fed is manipulating everything, where we have Washington out of control and the butt of its own jokes, and we have a complete abdication of adult responsibility in the world's central banking community, investors need to buy and manage. Now, that sounds complicated, but it doesn't really have to be. If your investment hypothesis is good, you've identified something that's important, that provides dividends, has a good product, whatever the variable is that you use for your personal risk tolerance, then managing actually is not that difficult because you can use profit targets, you can use something as simple as trailing stops to ensure that you capture profits and minimize losses if the markets roll over. I'd rather go that way and remove all the emotion, or as much emotion as I can, so that way when big days do come along, like yesterday, I have the intellectual freedom and a lack of pressure that I can actually look at the markets positively, and I can go shopping, and I can focus on those things I want to buy, as opposed to playing complete defense.
Sounds perfect to me. Thank you so much for keeping a calm head out there when we see markets like yesterday, and thanks also for being a real educator to investors. We really appreciate that at The Money Show, and I hope you have a great day.
You as well. It is my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Bye-bye.